Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Bobcast. With you, as always, is Bob, live in the lounge, staring at the Ouija board. Super stoked for tonight's guest. We're recording this on 11-11, a day of process, a day of trusting the universe. A couple podcasts back, I was interviewing Will Drinker, and he's a videographer, director, slash artiste who's worked with tonight's guest. And he was like, you should check out the video. And I really liked it. It was fun. It reminded me of, like, to be quite honest, it reminded me of this band called Town Hall back in the day in South Philadelphia that kind of had the same vibe, just living life, having a good time, you know, being free. And then I checked out his Instagram and I saw that he's like a community builder, and like he has like this wonderful stage where he invites people into his life so he can share art with others. And we celebrate that here on the Bobcast. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ryan Tennis to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. You know, it's so funny that you mentioned Town Hall, because one of the co-producers and the engineer of that track was none other than Tim Sonnefeld, who I don't know.
So yeah, he produced one of my albums that I did called The Golden Dragon by a band called Downtown Harvest. And it's like my favorite thing that we've ever done.
Yeah, I mean, he's fantastic. So I went out to L.A. and was working with this cat, Brahm Genslinger, who I grew up with, to record the song, to co-produce it. And we used the studio where Tim is the head engineer. And he engineered the session. And you know, he's so fantastic. And he's so literate and so able to communicate well. I mean, he really was a co-producer of the session. So that's the way we ended up writing it all down. That's cool though.
Maybe that's why. Exactly. I had no idea about that, but I mean, like, there's something to be said about that. He resonates that type of energy, I guess. I don't know what it is, but
yeah. And the cat who played drums on it was his recommendation too. So
What's the guy's name?
Charles Ruggiero.
Ruggiero. Yeah. So let me ask you a question, man. So like, you know, I looked through like the whole Instagram thing and I was like kind of like blown away. It's like, wow, he's like got all this stuff going on, fun music, and he throws awesome events in his backyard. Where did this inspiration come from? Are you like me with Steve Rubell, Studio 54, bring people together type person?
I mean, I think I am. You know, the long answer is it came sort of from a dream. So from like a vision. So a few times in my life, I've had a few times in my life, I've had these like little visions, maybe four or five times, where it's like, it's beyond a daydream, not like quite an actual dream, cause I'm awake and it's like, ooh, you have to do this. And so I grew up outside Philly and I'd been living in San Diego for a while, starting to really get into music, play shows. I still wasn't that good. And I was trying to figure out, I knew that I was leaving San Diego. I was done with that. And I was looking at Portland, a few couple other places. And even though I grew up outside of Philly, I didn't spend a lot of time in the city. And my parents were splitting up and my dad had bought a place down in South Philly. And he was like, hey, why don't you come keep me company? Come live with me down in South Philly. And he showed me pictures of this place he'd bought. And I was like, man. And I just had this vision of getting a bunch of people together. I was like, you could do shows in here. You could have music. I'd sort of been lamenting the loss of, so I'm backtracking here, but like I was raised religiously and I'm not really religious at all, but I'd kind of been lamenting the way that sense of togetherness and intention and community was mostly gone. And it felt like a lot of the baby had been, the baby had been thrown out with the bathwater, right? From church. There's a lot of great community and music stuff, but you know, once you don't really buy into that whole thing anymore, a lot of that's gone. So I started hosting I moved back to Philly, moved in with my dad. We had really cool neighbors in South Philly and I started hosting house concerts down there. Just going out to open mics and playing, inviting people to these shows, and they started going really well. And so for 8 years, I lived down there and did house concerts that we called clubhouse concerts. Mm-hmm. We had a ton of really kick-ass shows with like, you know, 100, 150 people would come and all different backgrounds. We had a lot of world music, just stuff that I would see out and about that I liked and booked. And so did that. And then when I moved out here, this was sort of the next level. I had another vision kind of out in the yard of where a stage might be. And I was like, oh, all right, I'm doing this. So me and my cousin, who's a carpenter who did most of the skilled labor, built this thing over the pandemic. And yeah, now we've got it.
Oh, okay. So that was going to be my question. Like, how long has this stage been there? So this just was a pandemic thing. Dude, I love that, Ryan. I love it so much. Cause it's like, you know, some people, like, they go their whole lives, you know, sitting on the couch, and a vision comes to them like, nah, I'll never get to it. I'll never do it. You know what I mean? And they don't do it. And it's like these regrets that they have later in life. And it's like these small moments you have to, like, you know, take a grab, you know what I mean? Like, you got to, like, go out and, you know, just make the most of it. Like, for you, like, so you came from, like, a religious background. I too was an altar boy who is extradited myself into somebody asked me the other day, like, do you have a religion? And I was like, psychedelics count. And it was like a joke, but, like, it was kind of like, you know, half serious, but that's a whole another podcast.
Sure.
You grew up in the church. You grew up in the process of being around that collective energy of people singing together, but your style of music, it has other influences. So I'm just curious, besides the church, where else did you find inspiration growing up?
Well, I mean, yeah, the church was huge, especially, like, these camps I would go to. There were a couple really good musicians, and that feeling of everyone singing together. And then, you know, raised on the Beatles. My parents were into Simon and Garfunkel, the Beatles, Crosby, Stills and Nash. There was Michael Jackson in the home. I mean, the record's okay. Not the guy.
We're canceled. It's ever the Bobcast. Thanks to sponsors. We lost them all. Now I'm just playing with you, bro. It's all good. I was just playing Michael the other day, and I felt so bad. Like, I was playing drums to Can't Stop Till You Get Enough, which has, like, one of the dopest beats ever. And it's like, it's a weird thing. It's like, you know, like, you, the music has this, like, thing to it now, but.
Man, here's what I was inspired by him.
I was devastated, dude, as a kid when that happened, by the way. I remember being, like, maybe, like, 10 or 11, and, like, there was, like, this, like, we didn't have TMZ back then. We didn't know anything. And all of a sudden, Michael appears. I believe he bought time on Fox and, like, spoke for, like, the last 3 minutes of The Simpsons or something like that and told everybody the allegations are not true. And it was shocking.
Yeah, I don't remember that part, but I do remember the allegations. And I mean, it was shocking, but also, didn't we all sort of know?
You know, I don't know. I was like 8 or that, you know what I mean? Like, I'm 41. So
I'm 41 also.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
So, like, do you remember when he burned his hair with the Pepsi commercial?
I didn't get to watch that much TV. I was, like, very limited. You know, I was allowed to watch Simpsons, but not till I was older, maybe. It was very, like, Square One, PBS. I got to watch, like, David Attenborough nature shows, and that was it, kind of, for a while.
So,
but just with Michael Jackson, I don't think we need to complicate it. He was a messed up dude. The music kicks ass. He's dead.
Yeah, he's dead. Yeah.
We're not supporting him by listening to it. All we're doing is punishing ourselves by not listening to the greatest pop music ever made. You know, if I were to speak to the ghost of Michael Jackson, I'd say, shit, man, so fucked up. Also, thank you. You know, it's like, I mean, messed up people do some of the greatest stuff. And this is the truth throughout history. Look at all the great
some we probably don't even know about too as well.
Yeah,
you know? Some probably have just been covered
tons
up.
People who have intense shit going on, and it's just like, we, you know, I sometimes play in a wedding band, and, you know, we sometimes play weddings, and we put Michael Jackson on timeout for like a year or two after that documentary came out. But man, we're still playing that stuff. It's like, if people just want to dance and have fun, it's joyful music.
Yeah, so that's kind of crazy too, because it's like, okay, so like, when you make something. Like, or like, I'm trying to reflect how I'm feeling about this vision that I'm having. So, like, when you make a song, it's like sometimes like a hodgepodge of all the feelings that you're experiencing in life at that moment, and then you create something that expresses it, right? Mm-hmm. And that song could be canceled 30 years into the future later because of suggestible lyrics that go against somebody's, you know, safe spot. the song doesn't age. I feel, you know, when I listen to a certain album, it brings me back to how I feel during that time. I don't know if that's going to be the same case for people who grew up not like us, but like listening to music was like a privilege, you know. So I don't know if people who are on Spotify will have memories of like buying an album, going for like a car ride.
Well, they certainly won't, because no one does that, right? Nobody buys an album.
I used to when I could buy them at Best Buy down the street, and now Best Buy doesn't even sell CDs.
Yeah, right. I mean, I still sell some CDs, but it's clearly just because people want to have something, you know. It's almost like
looking inside, you know, it's like buying the CD and reading. Stuff. Yeah, yeah, supporting. It's just, I don't know. But the Beatles, though, being inspired by them, must have been, you know, where, like, which Beatle was your favorite?
I mean, Paul's my favorite. I mean, I love them all, you know. I've just been watching a bunch of the documentaries and just re-getting into it. It's, they're the greatest, man. You watch those. I watched 8 days a week, that documentary of their touring years. Those guys really came out. They were so full of life and energy, and like everything they said was right and funny. And like, they had this playful thing, and it's like, damn, they just didn't take anything too seriously. They were so good.
They were.
Yeah.
And it hasn't really been, I mean, like some say that, you know, Nirvana came after that. Nirvana was its own thing to me. I thought it was wonderful, but I mean, the Beatles are, nobody's been able to come out with songs that collectively, you know, brilliant, you know, and like each different member contributing towards something, you know. Paul, yeah. Did you happen to check Paul McCartney's collaboration with Beck?
No.
I'll send it to you after the podcast. When the song came out, I must have listened to it. Paul had an album come out. I think it's Paul McCartney 3. There's a song on there that I like very much. And then Beck remixed it. And they did this deep fake video where, I don't want to spoil it for the listeners. If you want to YouTube it, it's called Find My Way is the name of the song. Beck and Paul McCartney. We can't play it here because I'll get, you know, flagged right away. But it's all good though, you know? So tell me about that music video, Alligator. Like, where did you guys get the inspiration?
Well, for the song itself, it was just losing my mind, bouncing around the house. You know, I think I wrote it in April or May, most of it in April or May of 2020. I don't know, early months of the pandemic. So the lyrics are just sort of about losing my mind, kind of like the back and forth in my mind of things I need to do, what's next, what am I trying to, you know. So that's where the song came from. And, you know, I had a few ideas about it, and I'm really good friends with Emily Drinker, the sister of the videographer who we sing together. She's fantastic.
Yes.
And so I'd seen some of Will's work, loved his work, and mentioned it to Emily. She was like, yeah, talk to him. So he came out to a show and we chatted, and within 5 minutes he was spouting out ideas. You know, I had played the song at the gig, so he heard it, and then I sent it to him. And that, you know, I think that was on a Saturday. And then the next day, he spent all day making a mock-up video of all the ideas, and on Monday sent me like an entirely edited 3-minute, you know, mock-up video that was hilarious. And I loved it, with tons of the ideas. We had talked about some of the ideas before in our conversation, and we bounced around a bunch of stuff. So it was just a lot of firing back and forth. And Will is so creative. I've never quite been around somebody like that, but it's just idea after idea after idea, which I have some friends and some artists who I know who are like that, who just have ideas and ideas and ideas, but Will really follows through on those ideas. And that's the thing that's really crazy, is he's always coming up with things. And then if he likes it, he's going to do it. And he's going to spend all day following that idea, whether he ends up using it or not. And so we talked about the song, talked about a few ideas, and then 48 hours later, I was looking at a YouTube mashup, you know, mock-up video that he'd made.
That's dope. I mean, I really like, I mean, the whole collaboration. I mean, he does have, I had such a great time podcasting with him. We went on a deep dive about The Shining and a whole bunch of other stuff, but he knew stuff that I never, I'm like a screenplay writer. So like, I kind of, you know, cinematic type of brain too, as well, like him. So it was fun, but it was really neat to find your stuff though, because that's like the best part about being like in podcasting is like, you can find these people who are in your area, you know what I mean? Like in the community, you know? Yeah. It says in your Instagram that you're a process truster. I was wondering, is it your process or somebody else's process that you're following? Ah, the 76ers jersey. I got it now.
Yeah. I mean, I like trust the process is now, it's sort of like so overdone. It's like, you know, it's too much at this point, but yeah, I loved it. I trusted the process from the start. And I don't know. I just love the Sixers so deeply. I don't know if you listen to Rights to Ricky Sanchez. I'm a Rights to Ricky Sanchez fan. That's my favorite podcast. That's like the cult.
I know. I've heard of it. I'm taking my son Sixers to his first Sixers game in December. We're going on a Saturday night. I'm stoked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know. When I started really getting into that team as after they drafted Embiid, it touched something super deep and it inspired me a lot in that moment. And so, yeah, I just got so into it. And at that time I was trying to just focus on the process on my process and not be as results oriented. And that's what I'm still trying to do all the time, but not succeeding that much.
Sorry, same, to be honest with you. I also lost my mind during the pandemic. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I went mad, you know? And I'm glad, you know, it all seemed to work out in the end. But yeah, I get it. I also feel sometimes that, like, mental health issues like that can be solved by being around other people with positive energy. You know what I mean? Like, I used to do these events at Whole Foods on the rooftop in Plymouth, meaning like concerts with three stages and like no delay time, just, you know, music nonstop the whole night. And I loved doing it. And I didn't love doing it because there was money involved. I liked doing it because that, like, people will remember that shit. You know what I mean? Like, they'll remember it for years to come. You know what I mean? And like, that to me is like worth more than like the money I get and blow on like a guitar pedal or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, you can't like buy that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And when it comes to hosting events and putting on, you know, putting on concerts, if you're in it for money, it's not a smart business plan. It's like, if you're opening up a music venue or you decide to start hosting events, you just gotta stop. You know, hopefully you don't want to lose money. And if you don't lose money, that's great. But I realized quickly with the concerts I did in South Philly, and again, with these ones, is I'm not going to be trying to make money, just trying to get a guarantee to the artists, cover my costs. And then, you know, there's a lot of value, even if I just look at it from a selfish perspective, to hosting cool things and whatever. But it's, what else are we, you know, money is just there to ideally get rid of things that take away our happiness and bring us happiness. And nothing makes me more happy than hosting a really kick-ass party and with great music.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. I've been around people of wealth and their children, they have no relationship with their parents. You know, it's like they're like black, like holes of nothingness, because the money didn't bring them happiness. It brought them indifference and brought them like to the edge of, like, the one guy was like ready to lose his mind because he couldn't find his car keys. And like, you know, like, I'm talking like lose his shit to the point where like I thought he was gonna like, you know, have a stroke in the driveway. But yeah, money can't buy you anything, you know what I mean? Like, for me, I just like being happy in the state of, like, you know, money to me, I talk about a lot on the podcast too, because it's like we invented that and really just screwed things up, you know what I mean? The whole thing, like the wealth system in America, even before that, like way back, like when you couldn't trade no more. If you can go back, would you go to like bartering and trading again?
Oh man. I feel like everything is such a crazy balance that I'm not like a very revolutionary person, you know. It seems neat, but there's just all these systems in place that I will never understand that are keeping, like, the world financial systems. There's all these messed up elements of it, and there's some things that seem like you could clearly fix, but more and more what you see is what I feel like whenever I look at, like, countries where the power structure falls apart, it just is worse for poor people there too. You know, it's just worse for everybody, but way worse for poor people. It's shitty for poor people everywhere. Like, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, who's the Colombian author, the magical realism, you know, 100 Years of Solitude author, has a quote that's on a big mural in the city of Cali in Colombia that says, "When shit has value, poor people will be born without asses," which is pretty fucking heavy. But so I don't know. I mean, I don't really have anything really educated to say about that, other than it does seem
smart answer to be honest with you.
When power structures, what's that?
Most people in America think that they're professionals on anything now. So for you to say that you're not, you know what I mean? That is smart, in my opinion, because
I just listen to a lot of podcasts.
Same. I listen to a lot. That's what I'm just hooked on, is listening to, like, I like listening to stuff now. Like, I don't really, like, I grew up with the television. The television was kind of like a babysitter. Now I just fall asleep watching it. It's something about the audio process I enjoy, you know, books on tape, stuff like that. I don't know, like, you know, I haven't got a chance to talk about it on my show, but I was just wondering, like, have you seen the news lately about that Astroworld Festival and, like, all the people, like, losing their lives at, like, the large show?
The Travis Scott thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it.
Well, do you, okay, so most of the last few guests have been a little bit younger, so it's nice to be with another 41-year-old this evening.
Right.
I'm going to sound old, and that may, you know, whatever. I am going to sound old. I don't enjoy going to concerts no more because of this whole, like, the whole compressed nature of getting close towards the artist. You know, I don't like it. You know, I don't like paying $60, $70 for a ticket to be uncomfortable. What are your thoughts, like, about going to live shows still?
Well, I don't go to that many big shows. I go see music a lot, but it's usually smaller stuff. Like, I go to Time downtown and watch all the cats play. You know, I go to Monday nights, like, Luke Carlos O'Reilly's Monday Night Jam with all the, like, the finest R&B soul jazz cats in the city, and all these guys who have played with everybody, and they jam, and you're just in there, and there's 100 people in there, and it's awesome. So that's so much of a better experience than a big show. So I don't go to that many big shows. I guess I'm trying to think what the last ones I went to. I'm trying to go see my heroes before they die. Like, I went and saw Paul Simon at the Mann Center, and kind of shelled out for good tickets with my brother. And that was awesome. And I went and saw Stevie Wonder.
That's cool.
And that was awesome. Also, I'm trying to catch Paul McCartney, and I'm trying to think who, you know. You know, I was a Dave Matthews guy. I used to go see Dave Matthews a lot. I just don't love big shows anymore, you know.
Neither do I. Yeah, it's just too much, you know. There's so many
great acts you can see smaller. But I mean, I love live music. I love seeing shows. It's the only, you know, I mostly just only go out. If I'm going out, I'm going out to see somebody play, but it's usually people I know or smaller things, you know. Yeah, I go see, I mean, my brother has a Latin fusion band, and it's always a dance party, so I go to that as much as I can.
What's the name of that band?
De Tierra Caliente.
Wow.
Which means from hot land. They're killer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What was I going to ask you? I got sidetracked because my son, who should be in bed, just got sidetracked in the room here. I used to have a spot where I'd be able to... podcasts and silence and stuff like that, but now since the pandemic, we've been doing it here through Zoom, and it's crazy. I mean, I got in-ears in my ears right now, so I'm not distracted, but I can still hear everything going on out there, ladies and gentlemen. There is no budget to this podcast. Yeah, but I really, you know, I was curious, when you, like, plan these shows, do you plan these shows and do you set out to have a theme? I saw that you had some comedy nights and stuff like that.
Yeah, so mostly it's been music. We did try a comedy night. That was our first time. I've been so obsessed with comedy recently. It has so many, I guess it has so many of the elements of music, but none of my emotional baggage that I have with music. So I love listening to like people, comedians talk about comedy or whatever. So We did a comedy night, which was pretty cool. We got some Philly acts through, but generally it's music. And so I'll usually open the night with whoever of my band is available or by myself. Sometimes I'll do a fuller set, but often I'll just do, 20 minutes or something. And then it's one or two acts, and it's usually just whoever I just book shit I like, I book bands That's I cool. like, and tend to go a little more world music. Like we had this cat who moved to town recently, Francis Mbappe, who is a Cameroonian bass player and vocalist and arranger. And he was Manu Dibango's music director from age 17 on, toured all over the world. He played on Fela Kuti's Compound and everything. So his band played, and that was fantastic. And we had El Caribe Funk, which is this Colombian band I've done a lot of stuff with over the years. And that was our last musical show of the year. So I just kind of booked to my taste.
Some of your favorite comedians to listen to?
There's so many, but recently I've been really into Sam Morril and Mark Normand. They have a great
I like podcast. Mark Normand.
Mark He's Norman's great. Great. And Sam Morril is, do you know Sam Morril?
I think the name's very familiar. And
it's like tall, is he in the same thin, vein? Armenian yeah, Jewish think, guy yeah. from New York.
Yes.
Very witty, know him, yeah. very it's jokey. Yeah. And they have a podcast called We Might Be Drunk, which is fantastic. Like both of them deal with both of them, like they make like offensive jokes in the best way, in the way that's not like Mark Normand, like he makes more jokes about race than, any white guy should ever dare. But I don't think he's offending a lot of people,
he's an interesting comedian. Very interesting. He's kind of good. I think he said once that his hero was, Norm Macdonald.
Yeah.
The delivery,
Yeah.
But that podcast, what's the name of that podcast again?
We Might Be Drunk.
I want to check that out. Yeah.
Also, what's that?
What were you saying about Sam?
Oh, Sam Morril also has a basketball podcast that's really good with something Stanos, another New York comedian. So I've been really into both those two guys, listening to them.
Have you ever heard of Smartless? Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and Sean Hayes. They each week have a surprise guest, and the other guests or the other hosts don't know who it is. It's very interesting and funny. It makes me laugh every week. I recommend it.
Smartless. All right, I'll check it out. I'm always up for it.
Oh, it's dope. Yeah. What other have you ever thought about starting your own podcast since you do all this like community?
I've definitely thought about it, and I've had a bunch of people tell me I should do it. It's more just like, I think there's a chance I will at some point.
You got the microphone. The microphone.
I got the mic. I got the computer. I like to talk. I just feel like I have too many projects as it is. I'm just like trying to keep my original thing up and going. I'm doing, working man gigs at casinos and bars and weddings. I'm trying to get this kind of venue essentially at my house up and running. And that just feels like enough.
Yeah, that's good. To set limits for yourself because you can go overboard with too many different assignments. That was me yesterday, man. I just went too hard in the paint yesterday, trying to do too many different things at once. And like you get to the point where you're exhausted. You got kids?
That I do not have thus far, which...
That's why you look so rested.
Yeah.
You look so fresh. I was like, damn, dude, how does he do it?
Man, no, I was listening to what podcast was I listening to about this? There's Sam Harris, who sometimes annoys the shit out of me, but I do like some of his stuff. He's, you know who that is? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, I do.
He had one about, it was just about happiness and satisfaction, different ways of measuring it. And one way of measuring it is, you know, a random beeper goes off and you rate how happy you are in that moment. And you do that all the time. That's the way people measure happiness. But then there's remembered experience. And when you look back, how valuable was it? And so parenting is one of those things where moment to moment, the scores are very low for parents. You know, when you have a bunch of kids, it's just a lot of bullshit and a lot of not sleeping and like a lot of like wishing you could relax. But the remembered happiness is far, far stronger than for people who don't have kids. So it's two different kinds of happiness measures. And
yeah, it is very true. I like the whole thing. So wait, you're saying that if you set a timer, like what, three times a day, and then you check in?
No, more like somebody randomly beeps you three times a day at different times. And whenever you get this, you know, vibration on your phone, you have to be like, how happy am I? 1 to 10 or whatever. I don't know exactly the methodology, but that's the general idea. And that's the one kind of happiness. The other is when you look back, how happy were you? How satisfied are you with your experience, with what you were doing? You know, because you could, you know, if someone was just always floating in a pool, drinking cocktails, whatever, you know, any given moment, you'd be like, this is great. But then when you look back, you'd be like, well, I didn't do anything. And also just, it was really fascinating hearing about the inconsistencies with remembered happiness. Like, for example, if you take a vacation for 1 week and then a year later, you're asked about how great that vacation is, you'll rate it a certain way, blah, 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 you know? But if that vacation was 2 weeks, when you're asked about it a year later, it's not going to be any better than the 1 week vacation. It won't make any difference to you.
You're right. Yeah. The collective consciousness of like what the, it is, it's weird. You know, you mentioned like vibrations and stuff like that, because I mean, I do believe that like, you have to match the frequency of what you want. You know what I mean? Like I was listening to Jake Ducey, you know, Jake Ducey, you kind of remind me of him. It's weird. But nice. He's all about that, you know, type of thinking. It's like, it's basically like, if there's something in the universe you want, you know, you have to align with that, you know, you have your vibration, like the vibrational match that thing. Yeah. And like, some people are like, but like, it's true. It really is. You know what I mean? You have to be able to attain your goals in the way that, you know, the vibrational energy exchange happens. Some people think it's crazy.
I've listened to a lot of that stuff, a lot of the, you know, the law of attraction related stuff and vibrational stuff. And it's so fascinating because it really does seem to work. And also it doesn't seem logical. And I simultaneously think it works and think it's kind of bullshit. It's so weird, but like, I'm really into it. I've spent a lot of time like listening to those things like Abraham Hicks and
I love Abraham Hicks.
Yeah, and that kind of vibrational stuff. And it's just,
I love them.
It's amazing, but I can't quite figure out why it works. And when I think about it in relation to, there's just a lot of ways it doesn't add up to me. And it does set off my bullshit detector. But then if I do it, it generally pretty much works. So, you know, I think it would, and the funny thing is, it probably would work better if I was better able to ignore my bullshit detector.
Yeah, that's the hardest part about existence, is kind of that, is that we're always self-aware of ourselves, right? I mean, if we were able to get out of our heads for a moment, then maybe we'd find some peace, right? That's what I hope the afterlife is, to be honest. I mean, to be quite honest, like just total peace, you know what I mean? Don't come in here, it's just peace. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, do you know that? So that there's that like a deep cut Paul Simon song, I'm headed for a time of quiet, of peace beyond illusions. You know that too?
That's a good song. That's, I do know that song, cool, yeah.
Yeah.
How many years ago was it that he was here? You went to see him? I remember when that tour came through. I just can't
It was like one of his many like farewell tours. He's retired so many times. Like,
that's, I think, okay, that was you know, I've become used to that. Like, okay, yeah, but you want to keep going, go ahead.
He's not done. He keeps saying he is. I think it was 17 or something. Yeah, it's particularly relevant because I've been doing this Graceland tribute show with Bagidi Kumalo, who's been his bass player for a million years. And so it's always like, oh, well, now he's retired. And so, you know, he's going to sort of try to help us out with our like Paul Simon Gracelandy sort of tribute South African music thing, but then he can't help himself and he's back out playing shows again. And Baghidi's back out with him, which, I mean, you know, I'm all for, but it's, I understand, like, I want to be playing music until I can't do it anymore. I think, let's see. I would love to be playing shows when I'm 75.
Yeah. It's the goal, right? I mean, like, that's just the one thing too, is like our, you know, society deems like a person to, like, musicians, like, as you get older, like, it's frowned upon, you know what I mean? It's like, it shouldn't be that way. This is what we do. You know what I mean? Like, I never understood that too. It's like, some people like, oh, I'm too old to chase my dream. It's like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, isn't that what life is all about? You know, it's just like feeling good, you know, like, people tend to give up. They don't build the shed in the backyard.
Yeah, I guess not. No, I was out somewhere. I was at Bob and Barbara's. I can't remember. This was six, mm-hmm. 7 years ago. And I bumped into Phil Roy. Do you know who that is? The Philly singer-songwriter who had a pretty successful career for a while. Like, he must be like up near 60 now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how I got to chatting with him, and he was asking about what I'm doing. I was like, yeah, you know, I was in my late 30s. And he was like, well, you know, I was telling him I've been doing these solo tours around Europe, you know, pretty shoestring mm-hmm. stuff that I mostly organize myself. And, but he's like, well, are you tired yet? I was like, no, I'm not tired. He's like, yeah, cool. He's like, I didn't get tired till my early 50s. He's like,
that's a great thing for me to hear right now. I really appreciate you telling me that. I haven't played with anybody in maybe 2 years, and Tuesday night of this week was the first time I played with anybody. And
oh, nice.
I forgot, like, you know, like, I've been playing music with, like, you know, loopers and, you know what I mean, like, all by myself for so mm-hmm. long. And like, to hear somebody else, like, I play bass, to hear somebody else play drums, somebody else play guitar, there's nothing quite like it, you know.
It's,
and like, I was trying to
it?
Tell somebody, like, you know, this job I was at, they're like, you know, like, some of the best moments of my life were like playing to crowds that are so receptive towards the energy exchange, you know, like, the normal people don't have that type of, I mean, I guess maybe they have it when they have sex, you know what I mean? Like, they may have sex and they feel that, but like, on the grand scale, for a musician, you're having sex with literally everybody in the audience. Maybe one good moment where you're just like, the energy, you know what I'm saying? Like, some artists have it, some artists don't have it, which is the sad thing. And I compliment you when I sent you the query email for the podcast about, there's this one shot where you go into your backyard and everybody's like filling in, and it looks like a really good time. It didn't look like a whole bunch of extras. It was real people. And, you know, it was the setting of the, you know, the concert stage in the backyard. So you knew what I'm talking about when that whole thing clicks, you know?
I do. It's what I'm trying. That's why I'm out here. It's why I'm doing all this bullshit. Like, that's why for the last 2 hours before the podcast, I was like trying to get all my lyrics for my song synced up so that when people post them on Instagram on a story, the lyrics can show up. So I have to enter them all and sync them all up. I'm trying to get my thing updated. I'm trying to figure out how to build that, you know, just shit that I do not like doing at all. And I put off and I'm doing it because I know, or I hope, that this will get me more good shows.
Let me ask you this question, right? So I've asked this a couple episodes back. I won't say who they were, but I mean, like, they disagree with me, but like, my whole philosophy about this day and age when it comes to the singer songwriter or the musician or the band who's trying to entertain, it's a damn right shame that it's also a responsibility to build content on your cellular device. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's not the true art of music. You know what I mean? It's just not, like,
it's not,
it's a good way to connect to people. Okay. I get that. But you know what I mean? Like, there was a time and place where the music was just good enough and it spread to other people, you know? And now, like, bands that have to have an online personality, they're worried about this Instagram, they're worried about TikTok, this all, like, I'm not interested in that at all.
I'm not very interested in it either. I'm doing what I got to do. I've recently sort of been this summer, I got a little more re-motivated. I worked on this video and did all the promo and did all that stuff. And I'm working on it. And it's like, I'll get a good push for a few weeks and then I'll be like, fuck this. And I'll leave it alone for a few weeks. And so it's really tough because it's not natural, at least not for me. You know, we're of the old generation, you know, there's a lot of generational divides, but we didn't have cell phones till after college. And that is the difference. That's the biggest major divide there is. There's no bigger generational divide than the one between people like you and me and people 10 years younger than us. That is the biggest divide. If you grew up with cell phones and smartphones, mm-hmm. it's different. It's a different world.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And, you know, it's hard to live in both worlds. And like, I think that would be the greatest gift for our generation, though, is that we get older, we'll be able to just remind some of the youth of like, you know, like that's our story. That's our great wild, wild west like, that we tell of the frontier, you know?
Well, Emily was telling me that you were in a band. What you were like in a band that was signed and doing pretty well before the record industry collapsed, right?
We were never signed, but you know, we were so close so many different times, and you know, it was fun. You know, it was the, when I speak to you about those energy exchanges and those stages that I played on, like it was just so much fun and I wanted to keep doing it forever. But I mean, we also too were, you know, like we were the old school 90s principle. Like I used to like put flyers up on telephone poles, you know what I mean? Go out in a convertible and just keep on going, you know? It doesn't happen no more like that. And like, and then it all of a sudden became MySpace and all these other things. And then like, you know, we had like, you know, interest from record labels, but they were more interested in like how many friends we had on MySpace. So we peaked when the internet was really popping or starting to pop and cell phones were popping. And like, people were like, oh, I got a MySpace. And, you know, Dane Cook was doing his thing and things were just the best.
Yeah.
But not for the musician, you know what I mean? Like, because there was no interest in putting out like a physical CD or anything like that no more.
Yeah. I talked to a lot of musicians who were, I mean, I got into it later, so I wasn't, I cut, by the time I got into it, that world had sort of already arrived. And, but a lot of people who kind of came up and people maybe a little older than you too, who were kind of signed or in that world as the record industry started collapsing post Napster, you know, and it was a really rude awakening. And I've worked with some older cats too, who are from that world. And, you know, the reality of what it takes to promote yourself as an artist is hitting them. And they grew up in a different world and now they have to, they're like, wait, I got to post every day and I have to do this and do that. And people aren't going to just come to my show because of my name. And I have to, you know, there's not a tour bus. There's not a, you know, all that stuff, you know. And so it's a very rude awakening for a lot of older artists who have had a lot of success. And now they're like, oh, okay, it's just a different world. And one thing, you know,
I miss the old school stuff. I'm such an old fogey when it comes to that, though. You know, like we were saying before, like I still like to buy CDs. If it's a band I really like, I want to look inside. You can't look inside in Spotify, you know, you can't read where it was made, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And that appreciation is gone in pop culture. And it's a shame, though, because it will eventually just will be a memory that we'll tell.
Yeah. That's the truth. Well,
and it's crazy because like, you remember in the 90s, bro, like we thought the records would be the thing that we, you know, like remember the records, our parents' records. Now we've got tapes. Like we thought that was the big generational, like, you know, push ahead, but we never thought in a million years that supercomputers would be in our pockets.
No. Yeah. Like waiting by the radio, ready to record, hoping the DJ doesn't talk over the beginning of the song. I remember it, man.
What was your favorite song to, what was the one you remember? You're like, I got to get on tape.
Well, I remember when I was like in kindergarten or first grade, my favorite song was She's Got the Look by Roxette.
Oh, dude, I love that song.
It's a great song.
She's got the look.
Yeah.
Dude, the drums on that song sounds so good.
Walking like and a man. And the video. Hidden like a hammer. God, she's a juvenile scam. Never was a quitter. Tasted like a raindrop. She's got the look. It's a great riff.
She's got the look. Such a great, great video too, man. Like, God.
Oh yeah, it's wicked. That's a great pop song. And so I remember waiting and waiting and waiting and finally getting that on tape, and that was pretty dope. That was a good moment.
Getting it from the top too. Like, and next up we've got Roxette with She's Got
I
the
I can't
look.
Remember if I got I think I might have missed the first little bit, but I got it.
We all missed the first couple bits, you know? We never
Well, I remember like Yellow Ledbetter by Pearl Jam was like everybody loved that song, but you couldn't find it anywhere. It was on some single. And I remember everywhere I'd look to try to find where can I get that single. I couldn't remember what the single was called, but it had Yellow Ledbetter.
You're correct. Yes, you're correct. It wasn't.
And I couldn't
on an album.
Find it anywhere, and so I was trying to catch Yellow Ledbetter on the radio for ages. Eventually, I got it, but it took a long time.
I gotta look. You know, usually I don't do this, but I gotta look that up, dude. We gotta figure out when did it appear?
It was on some. It was like the B side of some single. And you just couldn't find it anywhere. I'd always be looking, always flipping through the Pearl Jam to see what they had.
Nah, you know what? I'm not going to go down that deep dive because it'd be just dead air. But you know what? I love Pearl Jam. And it was so cool in the 90s, like how they released stuff too, because like they got so, or Eddie got angry, you know, remember what was the name of his radio station that he had? They didn't sell tickets. Like, we're just going to do our stuff on our own. Monkey Wrench Radio, it was called. You recall
okay.
that?
Okay. I didn't know about this.
He went nuts. He was so fed up with the whole industry. They stopped doing Ticketmaster, doing concerts. They tried to do their own concerts in Washington, D.C. with like a mail-in website, like the beginning stages of the internet. And then slowly and surely, they did their own radio station, which I think appeared on internet radio. And then eventually he came around. And just
and then he was like,
again,
this is too much hassle.
No, he's just so angry and drunk, probably. He's really probably just drunk on red wine and cigarettes and stuff like that. Yeah, I recently learned that Eddie Vedder still smokes Marlboro Reds. I'm like, how is that possible?
No way, does he?
Yes. And he's an atheist.
Well, I mean, that's no surprise.
I you know, for some though, maybe, but some might think that like a song like The Ocean or something like that, he probably may have some sort of spirituality, but in fact, he does not.
You can be an atheist and have some spirituality.
You are correct. I shouldn't be so glib, but
that's wild. I can't believe those people who can still smoke cigarettes. And like, I can't. I mean, I've smoked plenty of cigarettes in my day. I haven't bought many packs of cigarettes. I'm like that annoying guy who wants to take a drag of my friend's cigarette, but I don't.
That's how you never got hooked at all.
But boy, I think everybody's voice is different. But, you know, I had like my roommate, Rachel. I don't know. You know, Rachel Andy, singer-songwriter. Maybe. She's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Anyway, loves the Dube. That's no – anybody who knows Rachel, I'm not sharing any secrets. But, like, she could, you know, take three huge rips off a Fat Bowl and then sing Joni Mitchell, you know, sing Case of You, sing it down from the heavens, you know, perfectly ringing out. For me, if I smoke weed, it's like my voice, my vocal cords are destroyed. I'll lose half an octave, you know, and yeah. I just can't do it anymore. Everybody's voice is different, but for me, smoking just destroys it.
Do you do vocal rest ever? Do you ever?
I mean, I do. If I'm really messed up, I have a lot of I do a lot of vocal work. I do exercises most days.
Okay.
You know, when on my way to gigs, I'm always annoying. I'm like, my bandmates now know, you know, the last 30 minutes of the drive is Ryan doing his vocal exercises and
that's cool.
Trying to convince them to do them too. but I mean, I guess if I really need vocal rest, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. If it's like a lot of long band gigs in a row, you know, it's like the 3 or 4 hour gigs with the band that are killer on the voice. But if it's just me, I can sing all day long.
Well, I hope you continue to sing. Like I said, the beginning of this podcast, it was a pleasure to discover the music online. I'm totally looking forward to seeing you perform. When is your next show around here?
Such a good question. I have a bunch of shows that I wouldn't really feel that comfortable promoting. I'm kind of
okay,
holding
gotcha.
Off on doing a lot of promoted shows because I have a new album coming out.
Cool.
Beginning of March. So I'm going to be doing an album release tour. I'm going to play at World Cafe Live for the release on March 12th. Nobody will ever put that in their calendar. But if you are the like type of person who wants to plan ahead 4 months, and so I'm doing a lot of focus on that. And then I'm going to be doing a tour in Europe afterwards. And so I'm trying to put all my promotional eggs in those baskets. You know what I'm saying?
That's wonderful. I put some links down the podcast here below. You can check them out online. Definitely look at the video, Alligator. It is really well done. It's been a pleasure having you.
Hey, thanks, Bob.
My name's Bob. This has been another episode of The Bobcast.